everybody, and welcome back to the Chilluminati Podcast, episode 355. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Mike Martin, joined by my two wonderful co-hosts, none other than Alex and Jesse.
Hey! Hey.
How's it going, boys? How's your week been?
Oh, great.
We all have our problems.
We do.
But here's the real truth. Right now, as we record, Scotland and Brazil are having their World Cup match. And for those of you who are aware, a famous psychic
has repeated
multiple times that during this match, aliens will show up. We'll keep you informed if while live on air,
it could be
aliens
now.
Arrive.
The real Disclosure Day episode might be this one.
Who said this?
In Miami. Hold on. Well, I'll just literally
this just happened
timeline
today.
On social media is filled with it.
That happened today?
Yeah.
That'd be imagine it happens while we're recording. That'd be fucking crazy.
Disclosure Day, dude.
Disclosure Day. Yeah.
Brazilian psychic Vo by Bahina. Sure.
Getting that Bahina.
Nice. Predicted multiple times and apparently is a very good psychic according to the internet. Claims aliens will invade the field and abduct players during the Scotland-Brazil World Cup game.
Abduct players?
Why would they do that? Like what? Like
that makes
because
sense.
They are fans of both teams and they saw how both teams came out today in Miami. Looking awesome. I just want to say I went to get Mexican today for lunch and I was watching like the pre-show. Yo, look, I know Americans are all about like rah-rah America, but watching Scotland and Brazil come out and just be like, no, we do patriotism. Like we love like them loving their country through soccer was a beautiful thing to see. It was great. But the aliens like that, I guess, and they're going to come take them away.
It's like the Monstars are back to do more. Like, they need the best soccer players in the world.
It's like, that makes no sense. If the aliens are fans of the soccer teams, why would you interrupt the match and abduct them?
That's what I'm saying.
Space match?
Yeah. Of all the things they could do, abducting the players?
They wouldn't want to play after that.
Abducting the players?
It's like Alex was saying, it's pretty much, I'm sure, the plot of Space Jam. They're gonna kidnap the players and force them to play a Universe Cup, dude.
Yeah, dude, not the World Cup, dude. The Universe Cup.
Oh, yeah, the fuck. Galaxy Cup.
Yeah, that still has a sponsorship with Airbnb though. Somehow, it's crazy.
Yes. Imagine, okay, boys, aliens are revealed, and it is revealed that aliens and space life is just more capitalism. How you feel?
I would be like, yeah, all right, that makes sense. That checks out.
I would go to work the next day.
All right.
Would jump out of a building.
The good thing is, I'm already like fully Cthulhu'd out. You know what I mean? Like I'm gone. Like the only thing that can happen is like good stuff makes things better. Right. Like at this point, beyond that, like, Throw more capitalism at me. Ow.
Yeah, the Eldritch Horror already got you.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
I've already
looked into the void. I know the truth now. I can't be harmed any further.
Yeah.
My eyes burn yellow now.
All right. Well, this is exciting because it's a Jesse episode today, which was supposed to be last week, but we decided we're going to talk about Disclosure Day instead for 2.5 hours.
For almost as long as the actual length of the film.
Yeah. Before we jump into that, hey, everybody, head over to theyeti.com/Chilluminati because obviously the pre-order for the new shirt is up, which is sick. It is a mantid riding a rocket and she is thick. It's great.
Yeah. Shout out Mel for like just continually rising to the further and further insane things that I am like telling her to draw at this point.
She just crushes it every single time. Yeah. It's great. But we've also sold out of another poster over the past week or so. So there's only two of our posters left, the Chupacabra and the pineapple pizza alien poster, which is great. We've sold out of our stickers, not our new stickers, but our old stickers and a few pins.
Words. So then get ready because, we still are selling the new round of Top Secret stickers by Mudsley.
Yeah, we have Top Secret stickers volume one as well, but the sticker pack prior to that.
Those are finally gone. Wow. Yeah,
those are gone.
You guys are really soaking it all up, making sure got the newest stuff at the show, man.
Everything's on mega sale, so go grab it. Shirts that awesome. Are 10, 50, posters are $10.50 for a poster. Go grab that shit.
I've been teasing Range 4 Harry this whole time for Mudsley's art. I'm going to tell you, those stickers are all amazing. If you want to see them, just go to our Patreon page. They're free to look at.
Yeah.
It will reveal them. Just go look at it. Patreon.com/TooManyPod. And I don't have to tell you what else is there because there's a lot of other shit there and it all rules and it helps us make the show.
It does. You help us exist in this world. Period. Anyway, Jesse, what you got for us today? I know vaguely kind of what you said you wanted to talk about, so I'm interested.
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, we're flowing, baby. Sure, we had a little interruption last week, but if we hadn't decided at the last minute to do that, this would have been the next episode. And hence, technically, it is kind of. We just got done with two episodes of the Boston Strangler. And the big takeaway from that, at least for me, is there are so many ways serial killers can get away with stuff, but also ways that people can copy them, ways that, you know, catching them is very difficult. But the interesting thing is that it all seems kind of in the past, you know? It all seems like things that happened years ago when it was easy to be a serial killer, which sounds like a crazy thing to say.
It was easier for sure. Like before,
my man rebranded from one awful dude to another awful dude.
And I'm curious what you're going to go to, because a lot of serial killing still, obviously serial killing still exists today. Maybe that's what you're going to talk about is like the, how widespread it is. But another thing that's upticked since technology is while serial killing continues to exist, spree killing has become bigger, which is instead of the longer period of like, you know, a serial killer, which usually does it for sexual satisfaction or some sort of inner reason, spree killers just kind of burst. They like something makes them snap and they go fucking shoot up a place or whatever, or spend 2 days killing a bunch of people or what have you. And like that has gone up as technology and surveillance has kind of also gone up. So anyway, continue. It's a random true crime knowledge that's like in my brain from years of reading.
Well, save it because we got true crime knowledge a lot. Today is crazy. I have been sitting on this one for a while. I figured this would be the best follow up to what we just did. And it is essentially this episode is going to be a look at the book Long Haul by Frank Figluzzi. I'm not going to obviously deep dive the whole book, but I am going to be a little bit of a hypocrite here because we're just going to read the intro because it's incredible. But Figluzzi is a former FBI assistant director of counterintelligence. And in his book Long Haul, he covers something that, I'll be honest, I didn't even know was a thing. I didn't think about. It's not something it was even on my radar, right? We all know about serial killers and we've talked about them on the show about how, you know, in the past, what they did, how they got away with it, all these different things like the police fumbling the tech or, you know, not like having the killer, then letting them go, like all these ridiculous, or just not devoting the time and energy to solving a case because the people that were killed weren't deemed worthy enough to waste the time on. We've seen all these different things, but those cases were, 30, 40, 50, 60, 120, whatever years ago. Mm-hmm. Frank is tracking what is happening right now. One or more active serial killers right now, as we discuss this. Again, like I said, I'm not going to spoil the book. There's a lot going on in this book. We're just going to like talk about it and what's happening. But please go read it. Go listen to it. I think there's an audiobook of it. It is a hell of a read. I was like on a plane and very uncomfortable while reading this. Mm-hmm. Like I must stress, when I say we're going to read the intro, because it's a really great setup, I'm going to read you the intro to this book, but it's going to get dark quick, like immediately dark. Right. So just brace yourself. Hold on to your butt, because, again, we're talking serial killers. We're talking reality. This is not made up BS. So, you know, brace yourself. Prepare for what is about to come.
My butt muscles tighter than ever before.
Thank you so much to Cash App for sponsoring today's video. And let's get real talk for a second. The scams are out of control right now, if I'm honest with you. Like, I got a text last week swearing that a package couldn't be delivered until I quote-unquote verified my card. And, well, my mom nearly tapped one pretending to be her bank. Listen, scams are genuinely everywhere now, which is exactly why I care about the security side of wherever my money lives. So, here's the thing. Keeping your money safe from fraud deserves to be a priority, and Cash App treats it that way. With Secure Lock, Cash App requires a successful Face ID or biometric authentication to access your account. It's like your money is protected by your own personal bodyguard in a weird way. Even if your phone is lost, or stolen. Plus, if you're about to send money to someone new and Cash App notices something looks a bit off or that you might be falling for a scam, it will send you a warning before the money is sent to confirm that everything looks right. Turn on security lock in your Cash App settings today and pay attention to scam warnings to keep your money safe from fraud. Learn more at cashapp.com/security. New Cash App customers can earn $10 if they use Secure10 in their profile at sign up and send $5 to a friend within 14 days. Terms apply. Cash App is a financial services platform, not a bank. Banking services provided by Cash App's bank partners. Visit cashapp.com/legal/podcast for full disclosure. Thank you again to Cash App for sponsoring today's video.
It was early morning, April Fool's Day, 1990. When Arizona State Trooper Mike Miller spotted a truck with its hazard lights blinking on the shoulder of I-10 in Casa Grande. Miller donned his trooper hat, stepped out of his patrol car, strode up to the big rig, and looked inside. That's when the lawmen saw her, a young woman shackled in a makeshift torture chamber in the rear of the cab. As soon as she saw him, she began screaming for help. The fuzzy lion slippers on her feet only magnified the fact that otherwise she was totally naked. The driver was the quintessential killer trucker. The cops, prosecutors, and media bestowed the well-deserved moniker Truck Stop Killer on Robert Ben Rhodes. It was a name earned in evil. He was the one all other truck killers would be measured against. For his volume of victims, the span of his murderous spree, and the sheer terror inflicted upon his prey. He worked as a long-haul trucker for almost 20 years, and for at least 15 of those, Rhodes kidnapped, tortured, raped, and killed, leaving as many as 50 suspected victims in his wake. Rhodes built a traveling torture chamber in the rear of his semi and hunted the highways for his next kill.
Literally the dude from fucking X-Files.
We talked about it a little bit in the end of Boston Stranglers Part 2, but I'm getting away with it. Being a trucker and getting away with it for 15 years makes a lot of sense, because if serial killers move and they don't have a zone they work out of, they're incredibly hard to kill. I mean, to catch. Yep. Israel Keyes, which is a guy we'll cover one day in the future, had murder kits around the country that he had hidden and buried places. And so he would just constantly move, and the cops had no idea where he came from, how he operated. It's only when he slipped up at the end that it's the reason he got caught, like many of the serial killers who do this. That's interesting.
It's so crazy that you could just like be sneaky and like get away with it before. Now it's like, oh no, like if that is one thing I learned from Disclosure Day, I was like, God damn, they're just like tracking these people, and it's not even hard. Yeah. Like they're just...
Cell phone immediately means you have no privacy, you have no secrecy.
Well, just wait, because Figlusi goes into that, and it's insane where this book leads. Rhodes was busted for kidnapping the screaming woman the trooper found, but it was the discovery of his final murder victim, Regina Walters, that put Rhodes away for life. Regina was only 14 when she and her boyfriend, Ricky, slipped out of their troubled family home in Pasadena, Texas, to hitchhike their way to their fantasy future. But the only thing in their future was darkness. In February 1990, near Houston, Rhodes offered the two teens a ride. Ricky didn't last long. He was merely a speed bump, slowing Rhodes down briefly, but not stopping him from kidnapping Regina and raping her multiple times in places of his choosing. She endured endless weeks of barbaric pain. Her flesh was torn by fish hooks, and she was handcuffed to the ceiling of the tomb-like dungeon inside Rhodes' rig. The demons consuming Rhodes' soul weren't sated by the mental and physical torture of Regina. They demanded more, so Rhodes extended his cruelty by calling Regina's father 1 month after she vanished. Without giving his name, Rhodes informed the anguished man, "I made some changes. I cut her hair." Indeed, the last photos ever taken of Regina confirmed her brunette hair had been roughly cut into a boyish bob. Yet, for those who view the final grisly images of Regina, it's not her hair that forever seared into your consciousness. It's the horror on her face. Those haunting displays depict Regina in the final minutes before she was strangled to death. her body left to decompose in an abandoned farmhouse in Illinois. In the photos, Regina, forced into a black dress and high heels, stands in front of the camera, her face contorted, her eyes revealing abject fear. The teen girl's arms are extended forward, her palms are raised as if she's imploring Rhodes demons not to return, but return they did. FBI agent Mark Young said Regina's forensic report revealed something invaluable, he explained. Her pubic hair had been shaved prior to death. This was the signature aspect of the killer I would be looking for. If only Rhodes were the last of the killer truckers for him to find. That would mean no more victims would suffer brutal deaths at the hands of highway barbarians. No more Rhodeses, no more Reginas. There would be no need for the FBI and the police to look for serial killer signatures. But that would be a fool's fantasy. Long haul began in 2021 when an FBI criminal analyst told me about the Bureau's Highway Serial Killings Initiative, the HSK, which I was not aware was a thing. I didn't know they had a whole thing for this.
Yeah.
The analyst, whose real name I will not use to protect her identity, explained that over the years, multiple truckers had been convicted of serial murders. And today, the FBI believes, and this is crazy, there are hundreds. Yes, hundreds of unsolved killings that were also likely committed by truckers. The FBI analyst told me that the Bureau has compiled a list of an astonishing 850 murders believed to be linked to long-haul truckers. I was floored by these revelations. I decided I had to know more, to dig deeper, to comprehend what was happening. Just think of that.
Yeah. Trucking is a dangerous, like, for when it's, think about it. The person who's doing the killing is transient just because of the nature of their job. And a lot of the victims that they have are also transient, not necessarily because they're truckers, but they have maybe very little family. Things are very hard for them, that, you know, there's a reason they're
the somewhere fucking so yeah, in the middle of nowhere.
No one's also looking for them. Like, it's the lesser dead situation meets the perfect killer. And it's dangerous. It's another reason why Eileen Wuornos, another murderer we'll cover one day, she got away with it for so long because she was. Do you know who Eileen Wuornos is?
Like the chick from Monster. Like
Monster. Do you ever see the Monster movie?
Yes.
Her. Like she was a she would pose as like a lot lizard, essentially, and would, you know, and if she perceived a particular trucker to treat her in a bad way, as well as the truckers who actively did try to harm her and kill her, though there were victims that didn't try to do that, she would kill them. And like, it was hard for the cops to catch her because she was just fucking moving truck stop to truck stop across the fucking country. What are you going to, how do you track them? There's no cell phones at that time in the way that we have them now. Like, what do you do?
I will also say, like, if you're like a sociopath or like somebody who's just like extra violent or whatever is wrong with you that makes you want to murder people, like if you're when you're driving, and I, you know, I'm obviously not a trucker, so it's probably even crazier for them because they do it way more
long stretches, like, of solitude.
When you drive like that, you cover so much distance. It's so like uniform for a lot of it, especially when you're on some of those like real long straight American roads that like just are just straight lines in the middle of nowhere.
Highway
and then you
hypnosis.
Get to like an island in the middle of it that's like a gas station or something that's like a love station or whatever, and it's got like a movie theater and a shower and some shit, or like an abandoned one, and there's still like 30 trucks out there parked for some reason, and you're like, what are they doing over there?
It's that one time I went to that Buc-ee's thing. It was like a beautiful oasis in the middle of nowhere.
Buc-ee's is crazy, dude. Buc-ee's is fucking insane.
Buc-ee's is like finding like the Brotherhood of Steel in Fallout. Like it's a vibe. You're like, oh wow, these guys are doing these guys got something going on.
You talk to the CEO and he's like a hyper religious, going to dominate like, the world kind of guy.
Just give me brisket. Get out of here.
Give me your brisket and your silly little squirrel man or beaver. Anyway,
hundreds of murders have been committed along our nation's highways. Many of those homicides are connected, but many are not. Those murders were committed by multiple, yes, multiple serial killers. Some of those homicides have been solved, some of the killers apprehended, but many, far too many, have not. According to the FBI, in most cases of highway homicide, long-haul truckers are responsible. Long-haul truckers exist for days or weeks at a time in a world of their own. They speak their own language, eat their own establishments, sleep in their own rigs. part cowboy, part fighter pilot, part hermit, long-haul truckers glide along the edge of a certain seam in the fabric of our society, the seam that separates their reality from ours.
Yes, well, can I stop you just for a minute? Did you quickly say that they eat their own young?
No, they eat at their own establishment.
They eat their firstborn.
They eat their own children.
I was like, what did I miss? Okay, Doctor Who episode. Piss. Doctor Who episode about a sentient mind virus that murders by using the meme of a trucker serial killer from a movie. Huh?
Not bad. Isn't there a movie about the actual trucks just being the killers?
Isn't that what is that movie called?
Isn't that a Stephen King where the truck kills people?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Man, it's Stephen King Overdrive. Was on, I forget, like, that man was cranking shit out on so many drugs. A fucking car that killed.
One day I want to go through all of his books in order. I just want to do, like, there's a list that exists
day,
online.
No, more like 400 day. More like 700
day. Yeah, that's true.
You got to start now, dude.
Yeah, if you want to finish by the time you die, you got to start. I'm reading it. I'm like a fourth of the way through the book. It's taken me like 3 weeks.
I've tried to start it a few times and I've just never succeeded.
It's a great book.
Well, there's movies and TV shows. Exactly. And countless things, so.
Yeah.
I, for one, would prefer to watch the movie version of Langoliers because that shit's hilarious. I will never not laugh at that movie. That's a crazy movie.
That's something that when I was a young person scared the shit out of me that, like, as an adult person, I'm like,
yeah, it's the goofiest thing I've ever seen, but man, is it great. Yeah. Great. Killer truckers exploit that little seam, that little known long haul subculture that I clearly didn't know about. The ones where we share the same roads, but with different realities.
You know, they got good breakfast, though. You know, got good breakfast.
Most of those places, along the road places, got delicious breakfast.
Their bacon must be like, you know, comparable to none.
I mean, it's rough out there. You know what I mean? It's scary out there, but
that's all. But get some chili beans. That's your thing, man.
You
that's
your chili little, beans.
Your little tiny moment of joy. There's a second scene to this book, the one that separates the truckers' victims from the justice they deserve. That line divides the drug addicted truck stop female sex workers from their estranged families, many of whom who don't know or don't care to know the women's whereabouts. It is the nature of those victims and their victimology that keeps overworked, underpaid cops from prioritizing these cases. It's who those victims are and what they have been made to do to eke out an existence that keeps communities from becoming outraged or demanding answers to the murderers in their midst. These victims, many of them at least, live in their own roadside subculture, seen but unseen, known but unknown, same world, different reality. Then there's a third scene in which cops and crime analysts do their thing, mostly apart from the people they protect, the people they investigate, and often one another. This is the scene that separates one police jurisdiction from the one a mile away, 500 miles away, 2,000 miles away. It is the border between the state where a killer finds its female victims and the state where he murders those women, and the state where the bodies are then dumped. It's in that scene where city cops, state investigators, county deputies, and FBI crime analysts, all in different places, try to connect the dots that they don't know exist among the murders they've never heard of.
It's like the fucking open ocean. It's like the fucking, like fucking Star Wars space.
Yeah. Hyperlanes. Hyperspace lanes.
It's fucking crazy.
I mean, in this, for people who are not in the US, I always think it's interesting to see people from overseas come to the United States and realize how big it actually is.
Yeah, that was like one of the things with the world. One of the cool things with the World Cup is seeing a lot of like the people from other countries come here and be like, oh my God, like this place is huge. Somebody like fell asleep driving through Texas and woke up still in Texas and they were very confused. It's like, yeah, welcome. Like, but America is much more of an empire than it is a country. It's an empire of little countries. Like every state is a little country, its own
it's just
culture.
Big. Like,
yeah.
I'll tell you what, though, we got good breakfast, though.
I've heard that. I've heard that. Yeah. Those puzzle solvers also have their own subculture, their own language, their own way of moving through their world, a world inhabited by them, the truckers, and the trafficked. For this book, I pulled on the threads of those three seams to try and unravel the mystery of multiple murders. Along the way, I discovered something as intriguing as the murders themselves, maybe even more so. There are three fascinating, largely obscure subcultures, separate yet braided together, that sometimes collide atop cold autopsy tables and county coroner's offices. Those subcultures of truckers, traffic victims, and investigators and their stories make this book less of a whodunit and more of a who are they? Who are the truckers who transport the food we eat, the furniture we sit on, the clothing we wear? What makes them choose to ride the road solo for weeks or months on end? When do they see their kids, their spouses, if they have any? How much do they earn? Are serial killers drawn to this job, or does the job cultivate a killer, or is it both? And who are the traffic victims we choose not to see, the ones on the other side of the interstate rest stop, the truck side, the women who advertise on the internet that they are trucker friendly, the ones with long sleeve shirts to hide their track marks, who are trying to earn some cash so they can make more track marks? How does this become their reality? Whose daughters are they? Whose mothers are they? When they go missing, does anyone know? Does anyone care? Who are the people who control them? Which law enforcement minds, which criminal analysts, and which jurisdictions figure into all of this? Who realizes that some of these murders are connected? And what is the FBI doing about it? Can they even stop it from continuing? Their pursuit of these mysteries and answers to them, I submerge myself in others, sometimes dark, sometimes desperate, sometimes murderous realities. I heard it from them. I saw it for myself. And that's the intro to the book. Literally, this guy is like, I'm going to go to the ground and figure this shit out.
This is insane to me. This is actually like the picture that I'm being painted is that there's like a subculture among truckers that's like pretty widespread of just like dead ass murderers. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, pretty much. Yes.
The thing
that's
I'm
exactly
most
what you're hearing
at this point, at this juncture, the perspective I'm most interested in is like, what about the like ones that aren't killers? How much do they run into killers? That's something that I'm so.
Well, I don't think they do, but they just don't know.
That's exactly know. Like how many, like as we covered killers in the past, so many of them have like a joy or it's a game to them to keep a frontward facing normalcy. So that when the mask is pulled on their victim, they can like, you know, live in that surprise of just like, oh, you're not safe. I'm going to fucking like kill you or torture you. Like, that one guy at the beginning, clearly like a process killer. It's less about the killing and more about the fucking weeks of torture and power that they lord over this person. Like, and certain jobs do, I think it's certain jobs do attract these kinds of people. Like, yeah.
What percentage do you think of people are murderers?
I can't imagine
truckers?
It's
no,
a
small.
Lot, but it's, yeah, there's a lot of truckers, but I have to imagine that, you know, it,
hundreds of murders is a lot of murders.
Yeah. Oh, there's, I think, somewhere in the book, and I might have written that down as a note, I think it's like 450 potential killers.
That's
like
a
serial
lot.
Killers as truckers. That's a lot. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm like, I'm like, based on what I'm like guessing, I'm going to like throw out a number about how many truckers are on the road at one time in America. And it's going to be like wrong by like a factor of like two.
I have to imagine it's a lot, like a lot. Cause the country's so big and we don't fly it and trains are slow. So it has to, there's truckers, long haul truckers probably everywhere.
And even now our infrastructure is pretty crazy. Like,
yeah,
compared to a lot of, cause like, like a lot of other countries are able to have lots of stuff, but like you guys just said, we are very, very large. It's crazy. You can get fresh seafood. What's
your guess? A day. How many truckers on the road in the US a day?
15,000.
Jesse?
I'll say 45,000.
3.5 million.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Like 450 of them being is like what, less than a percent?
But that's how you get, that's how they can get lost in it.
Exactly.
With that many truckers out there on the road, you one, have to deduce a trucker killed this person, and then two, have to find them from 3.5 million?
And that's crazy. And there's 13 million that are registered. There's 13 million truckers registered.
That's just a day. And so there could be ones that are like, I'm taking the day off. Yeah.
And imagine, you're just like, okay, like this is what I think about whenever I'm driving, but like you go to a diner and you go have like just like lunch or whatever, like you're there for an hour and a half or whatever. How many trucks do you think passed you
exactly
in that period of time? It's insane amount.
Like your brain, you don't even know. It's so insane many. Amount. It's you know, he poses the question. I think his question of like, can we stop it is no, because humans are always going to be
hold
born.
Hold on now.
All right. Go ahead.
Because again, Frank, like, does, I was so impressed by this book. So to begin, Frank meets with a woman. He mentions that, you know, we're not going to give her name, who leads the FBI's Highway Serial Killings Initiative program. It is a program the Bureau first made public in 2009. And then he straight up asked her, like, do you think, you know, all of these unsolved murders are by truck drivers? And she's like, you know, the data shows, yeah. The entire focus of the HSK initiative is long haul truckers, like the entirety of it. Now, Frank goes out of his way to say, like, look, I'm not saying every long haul trucker is a serial killer or even involved in crimes. What I am saying is that the FBI says that of roadside murders, truckers are the ones committing most of them.
Just a numbers game. It's just a numbers game. There's a lot of truckers, right? Out on the roads. So, of course, the most people that are killing people out on the roads are going to be truckers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Logistics of the job make a perfect cover, right? A driver can pull into a town, commit some terrible murder, immediately drive off, putting hundreds of miles between himself and the crime scene before anyone even discovered the body. And the crazy thing is that that doesn't seem weird. You know, like if I went around killing people in LA and then Jesse Cox drove off, people would be like, well, why do you do that?
Yeah, where's but Jesse going?
Yeah, as a guy whose job is to drive, it's a perfect cover. And tragically, much like serial killers of the past that we talked about, like their targets are the most vulnerable people.
Always.
The ones that we literally avoid looking at and talking about because it makes us uncomfortable. And so when they kill those people, we don't want to, like, society as a whole is like, that's a shame.
And
it's just
to hammer home too, like it's also because the serial killers are mediocre, pathetic nobodies who take on the vulnerable because they know it's what they can get away with. And it's what they handle. Like, they are pathetic losers in every single case. I've never seen one serial killer case where I'm like, oh my God, it's a monster.
But except what an artist.
Zodiac.
Because what an
artist.
I don't
know who it was. Yeah, no, never once was I, you know, what did Muse doesn't exist in the world we already, of reality.
Even if you look even at Zodiac, the most baddest ass serial killer of all time.
But like, also, yeah, exactly. Like, what you're going to say. I already got
continue. Yeah, just like, if you look at him, it's like, there's nothing there. It's just a big nothing burger. It's like a desperate person who wants to be noticed, pretty much.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, I love what Figluzzi does here, because he straight up just is like, okay, so I'm going to go meet a trucker named Mike. And this dude is like, the way he describes Mike is he says he's a 28-year-old fire plug with feet. And I realized how old Frank was because I didn't realize a fire plug meant fire hydrant.
That's like that's like what Fred Mertz would call a fire hydrant.
Yeah.
It's a fire plug, Rick.
Yeah. The best way I can picture it is like, think of a bulldog. Like, that's how they would describe bulldogs.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Fred Mertz. I was like, yeah, no, that's perfect.
But like, low to the ground, heavy set, like stocky dude. Like, like Crendo, we call a meatball in Chicago. Like that kind of guy.
Yeah.
But despite his rough exterior, Frank paints him as like one of the coolest guys in the world, completely stand up. He loves a challenge. He loves helping people. Basically, he originally was a culinary chef at the Culinary Institute of America, and he was like top of his class.
The CIA?
He was so good that he would like help other people who were struggling and failing classes.
Truckers are like some of the coolest people you can meet. Like, think about how much they've seen, like how much they've driven through.
That's what I'm saying.
We have some listeners that are truckers. If you,
it's gotta be romantic as hell.
Huh?
To me, it's such a romantic job. I'm sure it's fucking, I'm sure it's fucking rough sometimes.
That's why people are attracted to it. I bet.
By the way, I looked it up.
A little bit of freedom.
I looked it up. 267 million adult Americans. So 3 million truckers. On one given day, 13 million registered out of 267 million total. That is a significant amount of the population.
But just think about how much stuff we have to move
and like how big the country is. And how
I'm just
like,
saying it's a pretty big experience. It's like a pretty common experience. It's crazy because I am such a city boy. It's crazy, but like it's just so nuts to think how many Americans are truckers. That's a lot.
So much
That's
of this country is open roads with nothing in between. Yeah, you know, like it's
like Han Solo simulator, bro. Yeah.
This dude Mike apparently was like such a upstanding guy that when he left the food business and he went into trucking, he then became an instructor for new drivers. And thus his innate willingness to be like, yeah, man, come on, Frank, you can tag along. So literally he lets him get with him in his big rig, his 18 wheeler, and like is like, let's go on this road trip and I'll show you our life. I think that's cool as hell.
No wonder so many people buy those fucking simulator games on Steam. Like, it's probably like, just like, you know, as big as flying an airplane. It's like, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
You're learning stuff.
If you're wondering how a guy in the culinary field ended up driving a truck, essentially he
developed a severe case of the gout.
Yeah. And so, he couldn't stand on his feet all day. Sucks. And so the restaurant money, you know, while great, he couldn't do it. So he pivoted to the open road.
That's not usually what they mean when they say you open a restaurant and you can't stand on your 2 feet, but that's crazy.
According to Mike, breaking into the industry is shockingly easy. It only took him 3 weeks to get certified, and most of that time was just dealing with DMV paperwork. He actually learned to drive mostly how to dock, undock, and unhook the trailer and hook it up. That was it. The rest of it was paperwork.
Is it union? And
bureaucracy.
Is it union work? No?
Well, no. So you're not automatically in a union. So like you just if you're so you trying can just, to get your
it's like Uber driver, you can just like get going.
And then then you have to find a job, right? But like after that, he had 6 weeks of on the job training before he was just cut loose on his own. But he did mention that the guy who trained him would literally be like, today we're gonna do ice road driving. So like we're gonna go to a really cold ass place and you gotta learn. So he like really threw him in the fire, which I think is really neat.
Yeah, great. I guess that's how you gotta do it, but damn.
Yeah. Mike explained that lifestyle breeds a very specific kind of isolation. A lot of the drivers don't have a home base. They have nowhere to go or any close ties to any community. He points out that the total lack of connection is probably why truckers are kind of rude or heckle each other over the CB, because it's their only communication and they aren't really great at it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like it reminds me a little bit of people who are chronically online and their only communication is with people through the internet. So they come off a little brash.
They're like super mean in real life, like because they try to talk convention. And like, ha, law, as if.
Yes. To keep from losing his mind, Mike intentionally has a home base. He intentionally has hobbies outside of work. He messes around with custom cars and motorcycles. But he notes a lot of guys out there have absolutely nothing else. And what he really wants to highlight is that it's like kind of a psychologically dangerous job. Like he goes out of his way to have an outside life, but for many truckers, it's all they have. And again, it reminds me of the internet, like the computer and the internet and the online space is all some people have.
Even to like, and I'm not saying this is like remotely comparable to a trucker's life, but there are some people in this industry that we have, that we do in the internet who like, by doing this job, be YouTubing or whatever, they don't ever leave their home.
Like, yeah, and then they turn into like entertainer little gremlins.
Kind of like you know, I mean, there's a combination of factors that have led to the situation that I'm in now. But like compared to the way I used to conduct basically the same job before the pandemic, I am in this Jesse house. Too. Like I am in this house all the time.
Like you have an office now, Jesse, but you used to be in the bigger communal office for a while.
Oh, yeah, I was in a huge office, and I literally, only because, like, I left the office during the pandemic, but only because it was super cheap to get this office at the time. Mm-hmm. I got it. It is not cheap anymore, so I'm out of here. The FBI, meanwhile, tracks dump sites, weapons, bodies. Catherine, the alias of the woman who leads the behavioral analysis unit 4, the one that he visited in Quantico, the HSK team there helps agencies match commonalities, victims, and hopefully find killers. So they're trying to like navigate all 850 cases that are currently open in the HSK, all of which they believe long haul truckers have committed. And dealing with that and dealing with truckers' lives and trying to get into what's going on there is the whole point, right? We learn of a person named Bruce Mendelhall. And he also had a killing chamber in his truck, which is a crazy thing to think of. That's like a thing that exists.
Do they read about, is there like a magazine? Is there like Kill Chamber Weekly?
I mean, I guess, like, again, it goes back to the idea of the Boston Strangler. Like, people get ideas from...
Do you think they saw the X-Files episode first?
Yeah, I mean, because this the first guy with his kill chamber was in 1990. This is in 2007.
Yeah.
So this is, like, a different piece.
Mind, like, whoa, another one called The Toy Box Killer is another one that had, like, a kill chamber.
Yeah.
He saw that shit online, and he was like... But again,
like, people doing it in the truck is that, like... It sounds crazy to say, but you have full control over what happens inside your rig, because most truckers, if you watch online videos of truckers like that show you like what's it like to sleep in my truck at night or whatever, they do not let anyone in their trucks. They don't, like, it is their sacred space.
Compared to a car,
you gotta do whatever the hell you want.
Especially people that don't have homes to go, that is their home. There's, yep. If you don't have a home to go to, that is literally your house.
It's a lot of space compared to a car. It's like a very like domicile-y,
especially those big ones. If you get in the back, there's like, there's videos of dudes, they got like gaming setups and like full beds and shit. It's wild. So this guy Bruce Mendenhall, he has his kill chamber. He's finally picked up by Nashville PD's Pat Pastiglione. It was like, he's in his vehicle at the truck stop.
It's like a verbal tick. I'm sorry. This is like, I had to say it.
Pat walks up to Bruce and is like, "Are you the person we've been looking for?" And Bruce goes, "If you say so." That's how they arrested him. Mendenhall was arrested at the same truck stop where he murdered 25-year-old Sarah Nicole Herbert in 2007. Recovered in his cab, besides various torture devices and sex toys, were bags of clothes with DNA from five different women. Apparently, when he was done with them, he would wrap them in a plastic bag with duct tape and shoot them in the head. After he was busted, he confessed to murders across multiple states. But crazy enough, when in prison, he paid inmates who were getting out to kill witnesses to prevent them from testifying. That's the kind of guy this dude was.
Wasn't he in jail already for the murders that he committed?
He was in jail, and he was like, anyone who's going to testify, because he killed so many people, they were finding new people.
Most serial killers, when they get arrested, they start to inflate their numbers. They start to brag. They don't want to hide the fact that they've killed it. So the fact that this person was like, I don't want people to know I did even more is interesting, because it's not the typical serial killer move, which is to be like, yep, I did it, and I did it this way, and here's a bunch of others, and here's like 90 other people I maybe definitely didn't kill.
I feel like that psychedelic element of being on the open road and everything being like PS2 game simplicity, everything's like a little smaller. Everything you go to is like simpler and smaller than everything in a city or even in a neighborhood. It's like, I don't know, maybe your fucking like prey hunter instincts activate and you just start taking people out like a psycho. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I'm like, they said he was a lone wolf and he kind of had this idea of like, I can, you know, I like run the show. He had that like almost toxic Sigma dude vibe of like, I am a man. Right. Sure. And anyway, he tried to do that and he got 30 more years tacked onto his life sentence. So fuck him. The thing that's interesting is that at that point in the early 2000s, he was convicted of multiple murders, but he obviously couldn't be responsible for the hundreds of other unsolved cases. And so I just want to give you this. This is from the FBI.gov website. It is the 2016 map of highway killings. And you can see just how many dots there are.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
This is the 1 year.
This is 2016 map of highway killings. April 2016. Now, I don't know if this is considered 1 year or if this is just killings that they have on record as unsolved when 2016 occurred.
Well, I'll say this. It's a fucking lot.
It is.
It's like there's some in every state, and it's like it could be like a population measuring thing, like based on like where all the killings are concentrated, right? Like it's like a population.
LA, San Francisco, the coast, but then also through Oklahoma City. And yeah.
You can see they seem to cluster where a bunch of highways come together into a point.
Yeah.
Yep. Like Denver, Colorado. Yeah. So anyway, Frank looks at this and he sees something that I think is pretty noticeable that you probably see as well is, in most of this, there's small stretches where there's murders, but he noticed that along, if you look at the map, along Interstate 40 from Wilmington, North Carolina, all the way to Barstow, California, that big one along the south there through Albuquerque and Oklahoma.
Yeah.
He's like, there is a ton along that line.
That straight line.
Mm-hmm. That very straight line. And he's like, that's what I want to investigate. I want to investigate that stretch of road. Most of these are female victims of opportunity, close to the highway, often near rest stops, and then they're dumped close to the road somewhere else. Right? Catherine, again, the alias, said there are two types of people they're looking for. Those who control the cause of death, who mutilate and are slow, and often there's sexual abuse and they savor it. And then there's just the killers who kill quickly. And that's actually a problem too. They don't have really big MOs. They just like kill.
They want to be killing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that is, and they're like, that's who we're looking for. And as far as the FBI is concerned, there are several killers, not just one, but multiple killers who have killed multiple people who are currently out there on the highways. When asked how many potential suspects the FBI has out there, this is where I got the number. They said 450. Like, yeah, a real ass 450 serial killers on the highway right now.
450 serial killers? That's like 9 per state or whatever. What is that, right?
What's crazy is I thought, oh, that's kind of like a guesstimate or whatever. But literally the book is like, no. We know this is what we're looking for.
Yeah, it seems like such a hard, like, yeah. How do you chip away at that number?
Like, they know this for sure. And they have cases dating back to the 90s that they've been tracking. But it wasn't until after 9/11 that this all really took off, the HSK. And, you know, when everything sort of reformed under Homeland Security. Frank tells another story of how there was a series of murders of red-haired women at truck stops, usually sex workers or strippers. And when they finally got like a guy they caught, Jerry Johns, who they believed to be the killer, they could only link him to one murder and an attempted murder of another woman. Then, months after his conviction, another redheaded woman escaped from a driver's rig, this time a guy named Thomas Lee Elkins. So there were multiple peoples who were killing redheaded women at the same time. So,
yeah, I mean, it ain't that original of a special interest, right?
Yeah.
That's so fucking interesting. That's so fucking weird. So it's like there's so many that there's like trends and fashion.
Yeah.
Like in the way that like outfits change and stuff. People are like, oh, you're doing the redhead thing for a while? Oh my God, me too, totally.
That's why I really want to do this after we did Boston Strangler, because it had that vibe of like everyone's trying to get in on it.
Yep.
Which is crazy. It's
fucking crazy.
The problem we discover here is that truckers killing women isn't really that unusual, right? Red hair or no, it happens. And the question is, are any of these serial killings, or are they just random guys killing random women? That's another thing they have to figure out. You know what I mean? Like, is it just a guy killed a random woman?
Sometimes you just do one and you're good, and then you're not a serial killer. Is that what you're saying?
Like, how on earth do you tell the difference? Like, how do you tell the difference if you're in the FBI and you're that's why there are dudes who are like, well, the MO of this one guy is he shaved pubes. Like, that's all they have.
Well, I know we got a pube guy on our hands.
But that's what's to look for, right? Like, that's the shitty part is like, that's usually the line between passion killing and like a serial killing is like a serial killing has like more ritualistic behavior to it, whether it be something simple as like shaving pubes, where like a passion killing might be like they strangled the person and that was it. And then that was it. And they never like it could have been the heat of the moment or whatever. Usually serial killings has more to it, a pattern of behavior, that kind of thing.
That's what's so dramatic. So this, like, he mentions another guy, Delmas Colvin, who was an
Sith Lord. Don't you even?
It really does.
Lord Delmas.
Apparently, this is crazy. By the way, he murdered nearly 50 women, mostly prostitutes, between 2004 and 2005.
Oh, like, my God,
that's crazy. But he killed for
that's
fun.
Like two and a half
said.
People a month, three people yeah. a month.
That's wild.
That's
he
like
killed for
every
fun.
Other week.
And what's even crazier is that he said one time he was on the phone with his mom while he was killing a woman.
Like, sometimes I like try to pretend like I'm not taking a shit when.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hey, mom. Yeah. No, I really appreciated the pasta.
Yeah. It's like sometimes I'm taking a shit and I like I'm texting people, but you wouldn't know. Yes. That. And what's crazy about it is just like the previous guy we just talked about I'm sorry, before the redheaded killings, the guy who tied people up with, you know, plastic and duct tape, he did the same thing. Plastic bags and duct tape, which again sounds just like Bruce Mendenhall, the guy we just talked about. So Delmas Colvin and Bruce Mendenhall were roughly doing the same thing. But Colvin, what he would do is he knew interstate laws, so he would dump bodies in non-death penalty states.
Oh,
what the
weird. But like, I feel like that wouldn't protect you because, like, if they could figure out the victim was from a different state, they could just charge you in the state that the victim was from. That's some
like half baked type shit. You can't get a husband and wife for the same crime, Michael.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I cannot stress it enough. This book is fascinating. Like, it is genuine. You're just like,
it's on my read list at this point. Yeah.
I'm honestly, it's a good read. He meets with Hannah Everett, who was a former lot lizard, right? One of the many women who wait around truck stops and gas stations for truckers, mostly trafficked for sex and drugged the hell up. Now she works in an organization that helps women get off the street and get out of a life that can best be described as forced sex work, right? Frank goes into the background of how someone could end up in that life. Basically, every messed up thing that can happen to a person probably happened. A lot of parents just being terrible, a lot of alcohol, a lot of drugs in the family. Yeah, just general trauma. The big takeaway, though, is that a lot of these messed up families from the outside seem like loving homes, which, you know, is the, I think, like going back to the serial killer thing, this idea of covering up the terrible things happening. And when, like, a young person, for example, goes out and is like, please, someone help me, because the facade is so, like, built up, a parent can just be like, they're acting out. Don't listen to them.
It's also, like, part of it, too, I think, is that we are only now in an era where mental illness is taken seriously, right? And, like, growing up, especially in the 90s, 80s, 70s, in a house that is completely unstable emotionally, you may be mentally ill because your parents are mentally ill, but they're not, you know, like there's so many mm-hmm. things that could have happened that lead to somebody being on the outs and ending up drug addicted and where they are. It's like there's still so many stigmas we still have to shake to be able to like treat a lot of the issues that yeah. are at the cause of this.
Yeah, it's weird, like how we design a job. It's kind of like a meme, right? Like, trucker, for example, is like basically a meme. Like when you say trucker, you start to imagine, especially if you imagine like an American trucker.
Yeah.
You start to imagine like a type of guy. You start overalls to talk a certain way. You start to talk a certain way. You start to eat a certain delicious breakfast. And then you like, instead of changing the job after you realize that it drives you insane, like a lighthouse keeper or something, you know, you just leave it the same because truckers are a thing and you can't like mess with that. It's not cool anymore to be a trucker if you have to like rest or whatever. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or hang out with people on purpose just so you don't go insane.
Yeah. I mean, like, I will say this next little bit here. Just brace yourself, listener. Frank goes into the fact that, like, usually there's a lot of sexual violation that happens to these women. He does not go into detail, but he does talk to a woman who says that when she was 12, she was raped by a guy in her neighborhood one day after her parents went out to run an errand. Like, in a brief window of opportunity, he saw her and he took it, which I think goes to show how a lot of predators and shit work in the world. Mm-hmm. Like, they hunt for windows to strike. They're always on. They're always activated. They're just looking for victims at all times and places. And the same thing for serial killers.
Crazy.
Right. It's just like they're always activated and they're just watching and waiting. Her parents went to run an errand, dude. That's crazy. And this guy just like swooped in.
Their entire life is set up around this, the truth of them being a predator. Even the outward appearance of normalcy plays into the whole like fantasy of them being a fucking killer and always look mm-hmm. at like their whole life is that is it. And a lot of these people too don't feel fear. Like, that's another thing is like the brain part of the brain that develops and feels fear doesn't exist for a lot of these serial killers as well, which is, you know, it's just so, this is why I like true crime so much, not for the murder aspect, but there's so much interesting psychology and like, sociology involved with all of it. It's, you could dig endlessly to like,
yeah,
to look at the human condition through this lens.
And I mean, The amount of sex trafficking in this country is crazy. Frank says it's unquantifiable. Like, we literally just don't have the data.
We've There's gotten no flashes. Single method to capture it. We've gotten flashes of horrific truths peeking at us through some pretty crazy trials and real world events. Yeah, we just don't like.
It's still hard for me to wrap my brain around the Epstein files. That entire shtick. Think about how long that was running without us ever knowing the actual details about it.
Did you like, did you see
there was just one?
There was this Italian, like, there's a big thing now about an Italian model who went missing and was reported missing, and they thought she was dead, and no one knows what happened to this girl, and then her name shows up in the Epstein files.
Yeah.
Like, now I'm like, they 100% killed that girl.
Like, exactly, like, that's what I'm saying. There's shit like that that exists that now. Now I'm in a position where I'm like, God, there's just no way for me to know. Like,
the thing that people
how
say
many rings are actually I out mean, there. That's under our nose, right there, like playing in our faces the whole
forget,
time.
You forget that like cliches are true, right? Like, we even you even said it earlier, like the invisible people, the like forgotten people, right? Like, we say it all the time. You know, we're talking about like sex workers and like waifs and street ghosts and just the people that are walking along the side of the road in the middle of fucking nowhere that just somehow are there. Like, what is to stop? We now see people doing craven things almost in public. So, you know, that these people were just doing this shit
in private in for secret sure. We're doing it
already. Yeah.
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 Thank you so much to BioOptimizers for sponsoring today's video. Have you been waking up at 3 a.m.? Your heart racing? Your mind doing laps, or you hit that mid-sentence brain fog where words just what was I going to say again? Either way, I see you. Or maybe you're going through perimenopause or menopause. I see you. I just can't relate to you. You know what I mean? But like, there's reason for that stuff. Those shifting hormones pull down the magnesium that your nervous system leans on. And when it runs low, it can affect sleep and focus and stress tolerance and so many other things. That's why BioOptimizers is here, and that's where they come in. And this isn't, BioOptimizers isn't some like trending brand. It's a PhD formulated, backed by 20 plus years of research and over 15,000 lab tests. It's not just like one type of magnesium. It's the all-in-one magnesium complex, seven different forms working together to support your sleep, stress, energy, recovery. This sounds like something you want to get your hands on and give it a try. If you're ready to finally sleep great and feel like yourself again, and like, let's be real, who isn't? Sleeping great is cherished these days. Head over to buyoptimizers.com/chill and use our exclusive code CHILL to get 15% off any order. Getting great discounts, free gifts, and peace of mind that never runs out. And BioOptimizers backs it with a 365-day, no questions asked, money-back guarantee. A full year, zero risk. Because at the end of the day, their mission is to empower everyone to live a stronger, lighter, longer, better life. And again, that's 15% off buyoptimizers.com/chill when you use code CHILL. Make this the year you finally get your sleep, your energy, and yourself back on track. Thank you again to BioOptimizers for sponsoring today's video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Figluzzi talks to the Deliver Fund, which is a nonprofit that helps train police on how to like counter human trafficking. And they estimate that it's around 300,000 people that are currently being trafficked annually. While another report from the University of Pennsylvania says between 100,000 and 300,000 annually. And while trafficking is down at truck stops, mostly it's because they've moved to hotels, massage parlors, and more importantly, the internet. Hannah, the woman that he talks to, really gets into it, right? She says that like she's watched all the sex work go online, right? There's a lot more signage warning about trafficking at truck stops and stuff like that. So no one wants to be associated with that, but it doesn't stop the trafficking. Instead, online discussions talk about going to hotels or meeting in a Walmart parking lot or using cash apps like Venmo and PayPal and stuff. As long as these men, women, children, etc., are outside of the law, right? When they're hurt and killed, it makes it really hard to figure out who did the crime. Like, because it's even more difficult when stuff's online now.
Yeah, especially pre-CSI, and like now you don't even like pre-CSI. It was like you could just like say stuff and be like just lying and like lead people somewhere and they die and then nobody ever knows. And now it's like somehow we're back to that, even though it's like just like we made like another digital place that's like rural. Like we like made like a internet version of a truck stop where you can like get taken out. It's like so weird.
Yeah. I mean, like by riding with Mike, his whole goal is to kind of understand what's going on and how anyone can operate in it. Essentially, he experiences like a grueling schedule, right? Talking to truckers, sleeping in tiny cramped cabs. It becomes very clear to him that the hours combined with the solitude, combined with the challenges of a modern life, could really make some people doing this job a bit more aggro than the norm. In a 2020 Canadian study led by Jennifer K. Johnson at the University of Western Ontario, titled The Health Experiences of the Long-Haul Truck Drivers and Their Relationship with Their Primary Care Provider, we see it is not a healthy lifestyle. A lot of it is sitting, unhealthy food, a lot of stress, isolation, things that...
It sounds a lot like my job, just so you know.
Well, take what I say next and think about like all the like sex stuff that happens with people in our job.
What?
Things like that allow people with a predatory inclination to exploit.
Okay, I see what you mean.
So like there's a lot of people who prey on fans and are...
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
You're just any number of trucker passing through. You can pick your targets. You can choose when to interact with them. You can take them from where you pick them up, kill them, leave their bodies somewhere else, and then move on, making it incredibly hard to track. And what makes it even more messed up is knowing that many of the women forced into sex work who are maybe homeless or drug addicts or just afraid see the freedom and the money these truckers have and fall victim to the like idea of what they could provide for them. So any chance they get a new guy to give them more money, they're going to leap at it, right? It isn't just about like, oh, I'm, you know, this guy's going to pay me. It's like, oh, it's another dude traveling through town. So, you know, a woman working a lot could have like 35 guys coming through and they're making money off all. That's yeah. Huge. It's like if you have no money and you're homeless.
It's literally like no different from like the girls from like Jack the Ripper days.
Yeah, exactly. Correct.
Exactly the same economy, mm-hmm. Exact same sort of like speed level, efficiency levels required. Absolutely nuts that that was like however many years before.
Yeah, and not to mention mental health problems and undiagnosed issues and all these things that, again, put them into what you guys are talking about, these forgotten people category. And it's the people that killers have mostly always targeted. The people police have a hard time identifying or sometimes even caring about. And again, we've talked about that with so many previous serial killer episodes. So there must be a way to prevent this from happening. And it must be said that in recent years, long-haul trucking has become one of the most technologically advanced sectors in the global supply chain. There's AI that literally helps drive trucks now. There's satellites and monitors. There's like a ton of ways to track supplies and shipments to make sure deliveries are on time, to make travel so much easier. Like there are trucks now in the corporate sector and like the very big chains that use AI driver assist and cameras to basically drive the trucks themselves.
They're like Waymoing food around the country.
Pretty much. And like, while that certainly helps HSK, still with the rise of online appointments and the victims still being incredibly vulnerable, like a trucker could park his cab at a truck stop, take a ride share to go then meet the victim off site of the truck stop. And then if I, for example, met Mathis at a hotel room by taking an Uber to get there and then murder him, first place the cops are going to look when they find his body isn't the nearby truck stop.
Right.
No.
And that makes it really hard to track these guys down. And again, the vast majority of big tech in trucks is limited to huge corporate truckers. There are still those who have their own rig. They work for small businesses. They can modify their trucks however they want because it's their truck.
Yep.
And like that one dude from the beginning building a torture chamber in his cab. And sometimes guys driving for corporate trucks can get away with doing all sorts of stuff because, as Frank finds out, a corporate driver can easily be on the road for months at a time before ever having to bring his truck back to headquarters for routine maintenance or inspection. And that gives them a huge window of opportunity to kind of do whatever they want.
That's fucking crazy. Months.
It is kind of like being in the ocean.
Yeah.
Like an old school shipping guy.
Out
yeah.
In the wilds, you know, just kind of out there.
They're like, hey, I just want to talk to you about some of the modifications you requested for the back of your truck. Hook mounts, Iron Maiden.
I'm just gonna dry out some beef in the bag.
What's the deal with that? Oh yeah. Oh, you're into self-made jerky.
You're like jerky. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
I have to have a hobby when I'm on the road, you know.
Oh, okay. I'll assume that's what anybody who's doing this is doing when I see this, and I won't be weirded out by it at all.
The big thing that Frank really understood was that there's a psychological overlap between people who are drawn to long haul trucking and those who, you know, we already know with serial killers and whatever, which is basically antisocial behavior. Like it all comes down to that. This idea of just, you know, I'm going against the grain because I can.
Yeah. Like
that kind of vibe. And
Wolverine
those serial killers,
solo book vibes.
Yeah. Like those serial killers who drive trucks, who have been caught and interviewed, pretty much admit that they had violent tendencies and picked truck driving to get away from society. And the result was is it gave them the time to sit there and stew and plan all the crazy messed up things they wanted to do.
That is a crazy outcome. But like thinking about whenever I'm in a car, I get like the best thinking done. Like when I drive from like LA to Portland in one shot,
time.
I'm
yeah.
like thinking. Yeah, my mind palace is like.
That's why there's so many great on the road songs of like driving down the road, hair like wind in my hair, and I'm just like living life. It gets you in like a peaceful mental state. It's kind of like a shower vibe where suddenly you have good ideas.
Not me, baby. You know what I have on loop on the radio? Bum 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 dun 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 dun.
But you're always being chased by giant balls and weird contraptions. So
yeah, like just like smoke. Hang out, we can only do it for like an hour before something's after you.
Yeah, everything. He's yeah. It's always like the great escape with this guy. Like the mouse traps.
Metal clanging.
You hear the music in the distance for first as it gets louder.
Weird amount of cigar smoking for some reason. I don't know why that's part of it, but it feels like it is. Conveyor belts.
It's weird.
Yeah.
Killer truckers remain a clear and present danger. In March 2023, a long-haul trucker from Houston, Texas, Ramin, and boy, I'm going to butcher this name, but I'm going to try, Kota Karam Razai, murdered podcast host Zore Sadeghi and her husband, Mohammed Milad Nasiri.
Dude, when it's a podcast host, that makes it so much more real for me, dude.
In a home invasion in Redmond, Washington, before fatally shooting himself. He had stalked her, called her more than 100 times in a single day, to the point she got a restraining order. And the only problem was, because he's a trucker, he was on the road so much, authorities couldn't pin down his location.
They literally couldn't catch
any court documents.
Dude, that's crazy. Like, how do you not know his route? Isn't that like the whole point?
Where do you find him along this route?
I don't know.
What jurisdiction has it? You know what I mean?
Like, up.
A route could be through 15 jurisdictions. So then, at the same time in 2023, James William Grimsley was a long haul trucker in Utah who was arrested for
Grimsley?
Not John James William Grimsley. W. Grimsley.
He allegedly murdered Terry Ladwig, a 28-year-old trans woman, in her California apartment in December of 1994. Forensic evidence later directed to him in 2023.
Right. Perfect. They got him in a nice, timely manner.
That's what I'm saying. That's how long it took because he's on the road. One of the takeaways Figluzzi has at the end that I thought was fascinating because it's not really the point of the book, but it's like a big thing. Is there's a huge demand, despite no one wanting to talk about it, from mostly men for affordable, commercially, easily accessible sex. And he's like, that's a big problem that we have. And no one's
it's
talking
like
about it.
Sex work is real work and it should be like federally regulated instead of
it
outlawed.
Would be so much better if most of the things that it's famous for is when people kill the people that do it.
Yeah,
right. It would be like, way cooler if it was just like, yo, this chick was great.
Imagine like, if truck stops had like a legal brothel, like,
yes,
some with like protection and like safety measures and all that stuff.
And you put your driver's license down and
exactly like, but like, it's all like, that's what we need. I think that would help.
Yeah. I mean, like, while he doesn't necessarily go in the direction that we're taking, like, you know, it does bring up the question if, like, weed legalizing sex work wouldn't prevent a lot of this shit, like you guys were just talking about. Human trafficking is a thing because men are looking for sex and they're looking to pay for sex. And there are dudes out there fulfilling the market demand. And it's fucked up because it's a market where the product is other people being forced to do it. But there is a market. Like, it's denying the fact that dudes are willing to pay for sex. Like, it's just a thing that exists. It's a reality.
Right. So why not just instead regulate it, legalize it, tax it, you know, make money off of it in that way. But also, like, it effectively helps to eliminate that black market of human trafficking. Will it annihilate it? No, you can never annihilate something completely. It's really hard. But like, just like legalizing weed, it really hinders the underground weed market when it becomes available and regulated, and also creates a safe place for people who want to do that kind of thing. And again, it's work, you know, it's like actual work. Like, it'll keep these women
should be
safe.
It should be respectable.
Exactly.
It should just be respectable. Like, I mean, you know what else? Here's an alternate solution. Okay. You know, they have like Xboxes in some of these trucks and stuff, big flat screen TVs in the back.
Uh-huh.
What if standard in every truck, dick sucking machine?
Down. Easy. Right in there.
Why did I know that's where you're gonna go? Why did I just, in my mind I was like, he's gonna talk about those weird giant machines that have like the little nozzle. That's so fucked up. You know what? Hell yes. I mean, like,
why not?
Frank does mention the fact that, like, there's another problem that most police are men, and like, as men, they don't want to be involved in getting too much into like the sex worker world for whatever reason. Like, Hannah mentioned that in her time at a truck stop, she saw one cop ever. It's like a weird bro code of like, I'm not going to ask what you're doing.
It's like on the map when it's like, there's monsters out here. You just like, oh, we don't go out there. That's the free zone.
That's where we would have to do our job. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, many truckers will say that police aren't really a presence at truck stops. Like, it's a vibe of like, we don't interfere in that world. Frank, when he was with Mike on the road, said he saw the police only once, and that was because they were involved in tracking down a potentially stolen car, not interfering with truckers.
It's like when you play those like freelancer games and you see the different sectors, and like some of them have like two police stars and like some of them have like one police star.
Yeah.
Some of them just have one police star. That's just how it goes.
Yeah. And Frank, to his credit, I love this actually. He says that police need to stop arresting like the sex trafficked and instead see them as victims and like try to find the bad actors who are forcing them to do this stuff.
That's the reason too that they get away with it, because the women who like, maybe not the ones that are fucking killed, but the ones who are hurt or abused or taken advantage of, they don't want to go to the cops because the cops are going to just fucking arrest them for being a sex worker.
And anybody really want them to have that penalty? Like, right? You know what I mean? Does anybody really want that to be the quote unquote punishment, which is not really what penalties are supposed to be? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, again, Hannah says that it has to be a community effort. Basically, cops need to do their thing. Social workers need to do their thing. Drug treatment centers need to do their thing. Like, it's really easy to turn a blind eye on these people when you feel kind of separated from them. And Frank talks to a bunch of professors and he sits down with them and asks, like, okay, would legalizing prostitution help with this? And they're like, probably not, actually. It might let cops focus on trafficked kids, since adults would have to fill out paperwork and there'd be sort of an agreement with the business or whatever. But right now, the big problem is, like, if you look at sex work in Nevada or whatever, right? Like, legalized brothels. Many of the girls there are, like, either forced to work there because of pimps or boyfriends. And then the money doesn't go to them. It goes to the brothel and then to the dudes who are having them work there.
So it needs reform as well.
The idea of a truck stop sex worker, like, there's a lot of problems to be regulated. And it's not the women who are the problem. It's all these dudes who are abusing them.
Okay, but if it was just a machine that sucked your dick that was in your car already.
I mean,
all right. Well,
now we're thinking with portals. That's all I'm saying.
Bad actors will always find a way to, you know, hide in the darkness and do things in places we choose to avoid or don't want to talk about.
The worst thing that you can imagine is always going to happen. Every time some fucking craven person out there is going to come and do the most fucked up thing imaginable.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes we can't imagine what they'll do. That's how messed up they are. Yeah. In fact, Enzo Yaksik, great name, another fantastic name.
Dude, that guy's a pod racer. Yeah.
founder of the Atypical Homicide Research Group at Northeastern University, adds a structural reason. Serial killers often choose unremarkable blue-collar jobs. These jobs allow them to fade into the background, perform routine tasks to save mental energy, and then reserve their emotional intelligence for learning how to exploit others. The big takeaway really is that as things change, people change. So as more and more tech is added to trucks, as more and more trucks are unmanned with AI, which is already happening, the need for human long-haul truckers will decline. Citing an article in 2017 from Leisure Sciences, researcher DJ Williams, Jeremy Thomas, and Michael Arntfield say, like, serial killers are already transitioning. Instead of using the guise of their employment to stalk victims, they're moving directly to the internet, using online leisure activities and digital spaces for their new trolling ground. The mentality of a serial killer, or just a creep in general, is always looking for the next way to get something over on someone, and they're never going to stop just because it becomes difficult. They will find a new way to do it, and we will still be talking about serial killers for years and decades and centuries to come, because people, bad people, will find bad ways to be bad always, because there's, unless we are in a surveillance state, which I don't think anyone wants.
But it doesn't mean that, like, but that doesn't mean the lesson is give up and don't do anything.
Oh, for sure.
Either. It means, like, that don't let good be the enemy of perfect. Right.
Right. Like, right. Like that. That's why he's out there. He's literally out there. Like, I'm, please go read the book. It's fat. Like, he's in the field. There are people in the FBI working daily to stop this shit, to stop bad people from doing bad things. And it's just one of those things that I think a lot of time on the show or on shows where they talk about serial killers, it seems like, in the past, this guy got away with these things. But there's, like, dudes actively trying to be that now. And I'm very thankful there are people out there who are, like, after these dudes.
Are you telling me there's an army of 400, like, murderous truckers out there on the roads?
That's what the stats say.
There might be an active serial killer near where I live right now. There's been bodies that's been showing up in the bayou near Houston over the past year and a half. And the cops say there's not a serial killer. It's not a serial killer, but the bodies keep showing up in the same place. It seems to be similar, like, victims. There may be one active near my vicinity as we speak.
And like I said, with those two guys, their MOs were the same. And the reason why it's because he just wraps them in plastic bags, duct tape, and then, you know, dead. So it could be a Boston Strangler situation,
right?
That's why it's so difficult. And, you know, watching, like, a really smart investigator just get on the ground and do stuff again. Fantastic book. I cannot stress it enough. This was a skim of what that book is about, but I felt very apt after we did Boston Strangler. And I really wanted to do this one because
click, like, the link, you can read more. It will be in the description.
Do.
Fugliosi, again, right?
If you don't like reading, audiobook it. Frank, audio literally, I believe,
one of my favorite things,
I think he reads his own book, which is great.
One of my favorite ways to do Chaluminati research is, like, audiobook in the background while I'm doing something else.
That stuff blows me away that people are able to, like, read that way. But I respect it. It is very, I'll tell you what, I really enjoyed the Redwall audiobook.
Some audiobooks are better than others by a lot.
Yeah.
It really depends.
Yeah, I like reading because I can get through it fast. An audiobook is as long as it takes a person to read.
Yeah.
Reading, my eyes are like, and I, like, you know, I can do most reading on a plane and I'm vibing.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I usually read, like, on my own as well. But there are some books that are just like, I don't have to rush it.
I'm not going to lie. I love Star Wars audiobooks because they do the sound effects and they have, like, all the voices like that. That's the kind of stuff I love.
Fun.
So, yeah, however you want to, again, just a book recommendation for y'all out there if you want to deep dive this a little bit more, because it's a modern take on serial killing. It's a thing that is certainly worth learning about.
Yeah, ever evolving. Thanks, Jesse. That was super fun. I mean, I'm such a true
absolutely terrifying.
Love talking about that. Yeah,
absolutely,
it's horrifying, but,
absolutely,
like,
scary.
Fascinating.
Yeah,
especially, like, something I don't often look at is, like, where we are now in terms of, like, serial killing tracking.
I think most people,
like,
don't. Yeah, yeah,
I'm very much in the 60s to 90s era of knowledge, but. That's it for us. We're off to go do a minisode over at patreon.com/Illuminati Pod. Thank you guys so much for listening. We appreciate you. We love you. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
anyway,
Me and my wife were sitting outside indulging on our porch one night, enjoying ourselves. I needed to go to the bathroom, so I stepped back inside, and after a few moments, I hear my wife go, "Holy shit, get out here, get out." So I quickly dash back outside, and she's looking up at the sky in awe. I look up too, and there's a perfect line of dozen lights traveling across the sky. We'll be right back.